सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति 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 विल चैंट चैप्टर 2 व्हिच इज 54 55 56 57 58 54 to 58 पेज नंबर 128 अर्जुन उवाच अर्जुन उवाच स्थितप्रज्ञस्य का भाषा समादिस्तस्य केशव स्थितदी किं प्रभाषेत किमासीत व्रजेत किम् अर्जुन उवाच स्थितप्रज्ञस्य का भाषा समादिस्तस्य केशव स्थितदी किं प्रभाषेत किमासीत व्रजेत किम् श्री भगवानुवाच प्रजहाति यदा कामान् सर्वान् पार्थ मनोगतान् आत्मन्येवात्मना तुष्टः स्थितप्रज्ञस्तदुच्यते श्रीभगवानुवाच प्रजहाति यदा कामान् सर्वान् पार्थ मनोगतान् आत्मन्येवात्मना तुष्टः स्थितप्रज्ञस्तदुच्यते दुःखेष्वनुद्विग्नमनाः सुखेषु विगतस्पृहः वीतरागभयक्रोधः स्थितधीर्मुनिरुच्यते दुःखेष्वनुद्विग्नमनाः सुखेषु विगतस्पृहः वीतरागभयक्रोधः स्थितधीर्मुनिरुच्यते यः सर्वत्राणभिस्नेहः तत्तत्प्राप्य शुभाशुभम् नाभिनन्दति न द्वेष्टि तस्य प्रज्ञा प्रतिष्ठिता यः सर्वत्राणभिस्नेहः तत्तत्प्राप्य शुभाशुभम् नाभिनन्दति न द्वेष्टि तस्य प्रज्ञा प्रतिष्ठिता यदा संहरते चायम् कूर्मोऽङ्गाणीव सर्वशः इन्द्रियाणीन्द्रियार्थेभ्यः तस्य प्रज्ञा प्रतिष्ठिता यदा संहरते चायम् कूर्मोऽङ्गाणीव सर्वशः इन्द्रियाणीन्द्रियार्थेभ्यः तस्य प्रज्ञा प्रतिष्ठिता This portion from verse 54 till the end of this chapter is called the Sthita Prajna portion. Sthita Prajna means one who has steady wisdom. Sthira Prajna. It begins with Arjuna's question to Krishna. He asked this question. Sthita Prajnasya Kabasha Samadhis Tasya Keshava Titadi kim prabhasheta kim asita prajetake. Lord Krishna earlier had spoken about the nature of Atma, meaning nature of one's own being, who you are. I said in one of the classes before that it matters how you look at yourself. If you want respect and dignity from the world, then you must have respect and dignity yourself. If you are looking yourself from the point of view of the body and not from the self, from the point of view of the mind and not from the self, from the point of view of the intellect and not from the self, then you are devaluating yourself. You remember that we spoke about it. There is a value. You want everybody to value you. You want everybody to value your time, value you, isn't it? Similarly, they want you to value them. But the question that we need to ask ourselves is, how are you valuing yourself? If you go for a loan in a bank, mortgage loan, they will come and assess, they will send somebody to, you know, assess your property, the value of it. Let's say the value is some 50 crores and they say it's only worth 20 crores. You say, what is this? And you will bring some other bank fellow and somebody who comes closer to it, you accept. Otherwise you are a fool. So, similarly, everybody is valuing themselves from the point of view of the body, mind, intellect and comes to a very paltry value. So what Krishna is doing is, in the first portion, when Arjuna surrendered, he started off by talking about the nature of Atma. What is your worth? Who you are? You are not the finite, limited individual. You are the infinite self. The I is present all the time. It was present when you were a small child. It was present when you were a small boy. It was present when you were a young man. It is present now when you are an old woman or an old man also. The I continues. The I was present in your waking state. The I was present in your sleep state, in your dream state, and in your deep sleep state as well. So the I is something that is eternal, all-pervading, birthless, deathless. So you are birthless, you are deathless. But you are thinking yourself to be this body and getting worried about death and resisting change, and therefore change starts binding you. So he spoke about the nature of Atma. So basically what he said there was, you are not the body having a soul, you are the soul that has now manifested through us body. It has a body. The thinking mein farak padta hai. Perception mein farak padta hai. It's how you view the thing. Something that happens to you, if you say the world is trying to test me, for example, children go to school and they have exams. Right? Children would probably love to come to Bhagavad Gita class because we don't have any exams. So, I don't know whether you are understanding or not. What is an exam? What is a test? What does it do?
Evaluates.
It evaluates
how much you know.
It evaluates your current status of understanding, not your potential of understanding. This is where the problem comes. So when the test result comes, everybody is scared. Why? Because their perception is, it's going to talk about me. It's going to talk about you at the present moment. This is what you are. But what you could be is something phenomenal. This is what a teacher is supposed to do. A teacher is paid in school or anywhere for that matter not to teach the book. That's nothing. Who is a guru? A guru is like a craftsman. a sculptor, rather sculpture is a better word. A guru is a sculptor. What does a sculptor do? What is the difference between a sculptor and us? When a sculptor sees a bolga, he sees a Ganesha in it. He sees an Ambedkar in it. He sees a Lord Nataraja in it. A Lord Shiva, a Lord Vishnu in it. Whatever. We just see the boulder. So what has he done? He just chiseled away the extra paraphernalia. Then a beautiful Ganesha was there. So in each one of us, the inner potential is infinite. So the guru is one who should have this belief, and he should instill this belief in the students. That's what we did in the beginning. First things first. Like Stephen Covey says, you know, first things first. So instill the belief. Change your value system. Then you will not have any problem. My perception about test is, well, I would know where I stand. This is not who I am. This is what I am. Who I am is something phenomenally rich. I can become that. And the teacher is only there, paid to make the difference, to make the student understand and, you know, proceed towards who he is essentially. So Arjuna is told by Lord Krishna that you are not the body having a soul. You are the soul that has now come through this body. You have so many bodies through which you can come. And you are birthless, you are deathless. He spoke about the real nature of I. Having spoken that, he said, even though this you know, it's not going to help you much because you have your desires. Vedanta is not an informative education, it is an experiential knowledge. Please remember this. The Shastras, which has recorded the words of the Gurus, they are not wrong, but they are experiences of the Gurus. When you read them and you think about them and understand them, doesn't mean that you've got the same experiences as the Guru. So what you are doing is you are parroting the ideas of somebody who experienced it. The fact that they experienced, they had risen above the world. The fact that you have not experienced, even though you have studied about it, you come to know about it, you have not risen above. You know about it, but you have not risen above it. Therefore he says, it is not theory, it is not thinking, it is knowing. Okay. Therefore, how do you know? Unless you know anything, it's not going to drop. Unless you become aware, you know, nowadays they talk about spreading awareness about breast cancer, about AIDS. Some people don't even want to talk about it. They say, what? You want me to talk about these things to my children? I don't. Fundamentally, they think there is something wrong in you know, those things. So they don't talk about it. So nobody wants to talk about it. So deep inside, the conviction is that it is wrong. But the desires are there, it's pushing them. So the tug of war is already started inside. I am feeling that this is bad, but my desire is saying I should go after it. So I don't focus on it, I don't develop awareness, I never rise above it. I never rise above it. You know, you go to some of the temples, you will see some of the carvings of sex acts. Even in temples, many places it's there. So I feel very uncomfortable. What is this? But what are they trying to educate you? They're trying to tell you, you will not rise above them unless you totally be in your experiences, whatever it might be. But before that experience itself, we have some prejudice. It is bad. it is good, it is this, it is that. So either for or against, we have collected opinions and we strongly believe. So what happens is our mind never rises above it. So instead of that, you just objectively, with total awareness, be present in it totally. If a person, when he smokes cigarette, if he is totally present in his contact with cigarette, he will rise above it. Similarly with anger, if I firstly accept, yes, I do have anger, let me find out what is the reason for my anger. That means what? You are putting torch into your own personality. But everybody who has anger, you say, I don't have anger. Oh, I can conquer my anger whenever I want. You don't give me advice. So they are not putting the torch inside. The moment they light the torch, they can gain control over their anger. They can rise above the anger. They can rise above the fears. You know, one Swami Vivekananda was walking along the banks of I think River Ganges or something. Then a monkey was chasing him. He saw a monkey, he got frightened and started running. And the monkey started chasing. So one man who was looking at this, he said, "Why are you running, man?" He said, "This monkey is chasing me." So he said, "Stop. Turn and stare at it." He turned and stared at it, the monkey ran away. This is exactly what it is. Nobody wants to talk about their fears. You go to a cancer patient, he doesn't want to talk about it. Talking about it does not mean, oh, cancer is okay, you'll be alright. It's not like that. What it is? What is cancer? What am I supposed to do? You know, the moment you become aware and you accept it, then you are ready to face it. Then you stare at the cancer. When the cancer leaves you, you get ready for the pain. The pain leaves you. Pain becomes ineffectual in front of you. This is what Vedanta is talking about. So Vedanta is talking about experiential knowledge, facing it. Are you with me? So Krishna said karma yoga. What is karma yoga? What you go through in your grihastha ashrama. You don't straight away say there is no happiness in the world, nor do you say there is happiness in the world. When you read the scripture, the scriptures will tell you there is no pith or substance in the world. Who is saying? For example, in a family, an 80-year-old grandfather, a 90-year-old grandfather, who had gone through his life, through his own experiences, he has understood it, he has found out that there is no happiness in this Thai world, or passion, or anything. But he has found out. It's not a borrowed knowledge as far as he is concerned. It is his experiential knowledge. Are you with me? But he may be very concerned and he will give this knowledge to his grandson. It will not work out. Why? The grandson will get the theory, but that is not going to bring him out of this. He has to find it. How will you find it? You never give an opportunity. Because every time you are contacting an object, your thoughts are either running after it or running away from it. You are never there present as an onlooker. Your thoughts are constantly running after it or away from it. So you are never there objectively. So you will never rise above it. So therefore, what is karma yoga? He interestingly uses the word called buddhi yoga. Buddhi yoga means what? Awareness. Don't say contacts are bad. Don't say contacts are good. Don't say there is no pith or substance in contact. There is no happiness in contact. You find out. Theory is saying this. Theory said H2 plus O is water. Go to the lab and find it. That is how you do it in the science, isn't it? If you study science, you are taken to the laboratory and you prove it to yourself through experimentation. So this life is an experimentation. You can't, you know, derive the benefits of somebody else's experimentation. The facts may be true what they say. It may be facts what they say. But it's not going to help you. You only become theoretical. So karma yoga karo. Buddhi yoga karo. When you do buddhi yoga, you will rise above what you heard and what is yet to be heard. Meaning, today if it is only thinking, and certain things that you experienced, maybe because you contacted it so many times, you get bored. But the new thing that you did not experience, you want to try it out. Because why? Deep inside you believe there is happiness outside. Therefore you want to try new things. So he says, not only with reference to what you heard, with reference to what you have not heard also, you will become detached and you will become a Sthita Prajna. This is what he said. So Sthita Prajna means what? He will be very much in the world, but the object will not take away his awareness. He will be completely aware while he is in the present of object, in the middle of what object it is. This is the Sthita Prajna. So Arjuna is curious to know, who is such a person? What is his definition? How to become a Sthita Prajna, etc. So he asks in 54, what is the description of one of steady wisdom merged in super conscious state, O Keshava? How does one of steady wisdom speak? How sit? How walk? Okay. So how does a man of steady wisdom, what is his inner nature? What is the description? What defines a person who is reached that state? How do you know who has reached that state? And if it is to be measured only with reference to the inside, and since I am not that developed inside, I do not know. Many times it happens, you know. In fact, this is one of the most inspiring stories I heard from my guru. He says, there was a Swami whose lectures were very enthralling and very powerful, and it was telecast in radios many times those days. And somebody who has been hearing him regularly was inspired, and he wanted to go and visit the ashram that is conducted by this Swami, that's run by this Swami. So he once wrote a letter to the Swami saying, I would like to come to your ashram for so many days and stay and learn from you, so please give me permission to come. So Swami wrote back saying, you're most welcome, you can come on these days, I'm available, and somebody will come to the station to pick you up and bring you to the ashram. So he went there, and somebody was there to pick him up from the station, and he was brought to the ashram and said, this is the ashram schedule, the lecture will begin at this time, so get ready and come back. So he went, got ready and went there, and to his astonishment he saw the very person who brought him is the one who is the Swami who is sitting and lecturing there. In other words, he has been hearing the lectures and he has imagined the picture of a Swami in some other way. He never thought he would be so simple, and you know, he never thought about it like that. So now what I am trying to say is, a Sthita Prajna may be sitting next to you. Externally he may look exactly like you. Like for example, Swami Ramtirtha lectured many places, powerful lectures. Swami Ramana Maharishi hardly spoke. Okay. Hardly spoke. Vivekananda lectured, you know. So you don't know. A Sthita Prajna's external behavior might be exactly like you and me. Krishna playing with gopis. Arjuna never suspected. That is why in the first chapter, if you see, Arjuna never surrendered. He thought he knows. In the very first chapter, the whole thing was Arjuna speaking. He never suspected, because he had always seen Krishna, you know, the very same person who played with gopis, taking away their clothes when they were swimming. Right? The same Krishna extended the sari length of Draupadi. The same person who was playing with gopis and children in Vrindavan, same person in the battlefield telling Arjuna, kill them. You can't understand a Sthita Prajna from outside that easily, because it is more of inner perfection, and perfection cannot be attained externally. We talked about it last week also. I gave the example of Birbal and Akbar. What happened between them? Akbar drew a line on the board and said, try to make it small without touching it. Birbal just drew another bigger line. So in outside world, there is no perfection. The more perfection you attain, the more imperfections will come to your surface. You with me? So therefore, the perfection is always inside. When Vedanta talked about contentment, it's talking about the inner contentment. It's not talking about being contented with the external achievements. This is where the misunderstanding is. In the West, the external achievements are increasing, but the inner content is becoming lesser and lesser by their own admission. In the East, not that they have achieved inner contentment, but they are falsely coming to external contentment. Therefore, what are you supposed to do? What is Vedanta talking about? Inside contentment, outside go on contributing and improving. So Siddha Prajna is to do with inner perfection, inner correction, inner balance. But I may not be somebody who is able to understand that, like they say in English, no, only a Milton can understand a Milton. So I may not be of that caliber to understand a Siddha Prajna. So first, even though he said, what is the description of a Siddha Prajna? Second, he immediately says, at least from the external side, what are the ways in which I can understand? So his question is, how does he speak? Means, how does the infinite express through the finite? How does he sit? When he is by himself, not bristling with activity, what is his inner nature? Then, how does he walk? Means, how does he contact this world? These are his questions. Can I understand through his behaviors? Can you elaborate few of his behavioral patterns, etc.? This is what Arjuna's question was. Then, Lord Krishna answered. We had seen verse 54 and 55, so I'm just a little bit summarizing and then moving on. Here in 55, when Lord Krishna answers, remember, from 55 till the end of this chapter, 72, Lord Krishna is only answering this question. 18 beautiful verses painting the picture of a man of perfection. And one thing we need to remember here is, what is naturally a characteristic of a perfect human being should be an inspiration for us, and we try to imbibe that. So this becomes not only a state but also a practice. So when we study Siddha Prajna portion, don't think it is only talking about the state of a person who has reached that level. It's also talking about what should be our sadhana. So here Lord Krishna answers in 55, says, Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan atmani eva atmana tushtaha stita prajnas tadochyate. So he gives two conditions. He says, when a person casts off all his desires from his mind. Desires means what? Desires means obviously for the objects of this world. When we say objects, we mean beings also. It's included in the world object. So when in anybody's mind the object is not present, then he is a Siddha Prajna. But before that, he gives one more condition. What is it? And he is satisfied in himself, by himself. So what are the two conditions? Siddha Prajna, according to Lord Krishna, is what? Prajahati yada kaman sarvan. Sarvan, you know, you go on like this. Sarvan means all, and then manogatam, from the mind. Siddha Prajna does not mean one who is by himself sitting in meditation, but he doesn't keep any objects outside, but in his mind objects are there. It is not Siddha Prajna. It is not non-possessions. It is non-possessiveness. Simply because you take off all your jewelries and then wear white sari, white pant shirt, white kurta dhoti and all that stuff, nothing happens. For a while, you also do know that period, there is a call. Some period comes in Delhi where I've seen this happens. A lot of people do. Some rapt comes. Something comes and they're aware of these things and all that. Not really white.
Basically, what I'm trying to say is,
we are not ridiculing these practices. What I'm trying to say is, it should lead you to the inner dispassion. Just by that, that is not the state of siddhaprajna. So what he's saying, the word's very important. Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatam. From the mind, the object should be taken away. From the mind. Now, that is only possible if the second condition is fulfilled. That is, one who is happy within himself, by himself. For example, you are all by yourself. Are you comfortable? You are not comfortable. So what do? Your thoughts go towards calling that person, calling this person, or finding out where Vedanta class is going on at least. Something or the other. So when you are not happy by yourself, in yourself, then how can you give happiness to anybody? So what happens when you are not internally contented and happy? Your thoughts run towards the world outside for happiness. And when it runs towards the world outside for happiness, it either runs away from an object or runs towards an object for happiness. Are you with me? So there are two things. One is, I have to realize that there is happiness within me and it is not outside. And unless I realize that there is no happiness outside, my mind will not turn within and realize the happiness within. So how do I find out that there is no happiness outside? Not from the scripture. Not from your grandfather. But this is what happens to a lot of people. Are you are giving all this advice after you have burnt your fingers. Let me burn my fingers now. Allow me to spoil myself. You had all your fantastic days. You traveled around the world. You experienced everything. Now you are telling there is no. Let me also go through. This is what youngsters are saying. Allow me to do that. Now the question is, when would you understand? That's why I said, come back to that point. So therefore, you go into the world without any prejudice. Meet them. Be with them totally when you contact, whatever you contact. Then, when you have thoroughly seen it, totally seen it, then you will say there is nothing in it. Unless you know there is nothing in it, you are not going to drop it. Knowledge and liberation is one and the same. Ignorance binds you. A lot of people don't come to the point when they, you know, when they come to discuss with you. They beat around the bush to where they feel hesitant to talk about it. Even a cancer patient or anything, there is some, and they just want comfort, and everybody is giving that comfort, and they are going on thinking that, oh, what to do, I've got this, I've got karma, I'll go through more. Like this, they are not throwing awareness and meeting it. They will never rise above it. They will never conquer it. So, what he is trying to say is, it's a catch-22 position. In your mind, the object should not be there. Like I also jokingly say in my class, food can be on the plate or in your plate, but never in your mind. There's nothing wrong with the food. Food can be in the fridge, can be on the plate, it can be in your stomach. But it should not be in your mind. So who is the sthita prajna? Not the one who does not eat food. See how we understand. Oh, you know, he is an amazing person because he doesn't wear chappal. For the last 25 years, silver jubilee, he never wore chappal. It was a big deal. And I'm not saying one who is Sutaprajna may choose to live like that. That's a different matter. But these are the standards with which we measure people, you know. Oh, he is going in a BMW, he is going in a Rolls Royce, he cannot be a Sutaprajna. Where is it written? You show me. The point is, in his mind, you remember that story about the two sannyasis I spoke about earlier. The young one carried the lady and dropped her. But the old one said, how can you carry a young woman like that? He said, I carried her, I don't deny, but I dropped her a long time ago. You're still carrying her in your mind? So that is the point. In the mind, remember this, man should become like pure, transparent mirror. Clean slate. So when in a clean slate mind, any object comes, it reflects for a while, then some other object comes, that reflects, but there is no lingering attachment, craving. That is Sutaprajna. So he moves from one experience to another. It's not the traveling that's the problem. But when you travel, supposing you travel to Europe, your mind is attached to family at home. When you go to office, your mind is attached to the home. When you come back home, your mind is attached to the office. That's the problem. Office is not the problem. Home is not the problem. So, when you are in the office, the mind should be in the office. When you are in home, mind should be at home. That's all. But for that, you should do Karma Yoga, like what he said before, Buddhi Yoga. When you contact the world consciously, remember Buddhi Yoga means conscious contact with the world, being there totally. Today, if you ask yourself, when I contact anything, can I say I am there in the contact 100%? My mind has gone to the past or future or some expectation, something. It's not there totally. I'm already, before I put the chocolate in my mouth, Godiva, before it touches my tongue, I already started thinking about the joy it brings. You understand? So I am never there in front of the object totally. So I am not going to rise above it. So there is one set of people condemning and running away from it and secretly wishing for it. There is other set of people who are running after it and getting bored by it and only looking forward for new pleasures in different things. They have never risen above it. So what he is trying to say, Kita Prajnasya Ka Bhasha was the question. So here he is saying, in the mind he is a clean slate. And he is happy by himself, in himself. This is not a state of loneliness, this is a state of aloneness. You can be lonely in a group. You can be alone in a group. He is capable of being happy within himself. And this capability of happiness within himself, he spreads to anybody who comes in contact with him. You can only give what you have. If you have happiness, you can give it to others. If you did not have happiness, how can you give it to anybody? That is why Jesus Christ said, be content to serve. What service are you talking about? It is like one beggar trying to inquire the other beggar, how is he? Is there any service I can do for you? You are already a beggar. I have begged from somebody, and from that begging bowl I am giving to you. This is what the situation is going on everywhere. Without being content, without being happy, nobody can do any service. What service can you do? What service a discontented person can do? Are you with me? So he's saying, sorry. Prajahati yadakaman sarvan partha manogata. I'm emphasizing this again and again. Sarva means all. Even the craving for studying Vedanta, all includes both good and bad. All includes both the so-called good and bad. Good also binds you, not only the bad. Whether I chain you,
shouldn't that be a craving for knowledge?
No.
Shouldn't that be
isn't
that important?
I don't know in what way you are using the word craving. Craving for what knowledge? When you say knowledge, what knowledge?
Like
information or experience?
Like you said Vedanta.
That's what I'm saying, Vedanta. Mm-hmm. Vedanta is an experimental knowledge, experiential knowledge. It is not theory. Lot of us are craving for more information. More information has not led anybody anywhere. You only have intellectual diarrhea. Just like you've eaten too much of food, you have diarrhea physically, you're having intellectual diarrhea because you've read so many books. And people think, oh, you're fantastic, oh. Now, how about Spencer? Once he was asked, are you an Orisha's reader? He said, no, sir. If I were one, I would be as ignorant as you are, he says. How about Spencer? The point is, knowing should be your, passion. Not information. In anything, like how a scientific mind will say, okay, I want to see the proof. I want to see it. Bring it in front of me. Let me see it. You prove it to me, I'll accept. So that is where Vedanta says, you listen from anybody, doesn't matter. Whether it is Buddha, Christ, whoever it is, Jesus, Allah, Prophet Muhammad, Krishna, they are not saying what they are saying is wrong. They are saying absolute gospel truth. But it will benefit you only if you digest it and experience it. Not otherwise. So, therefore, don't come to any prejudice. Contact with awareness. Then when your mind becomes free, you will move within you and you will see the happiness there. So there are two conditions. When you grow, then the lower drops. In this context, I said, nobody can give up anything. You can only take up something higher. When you start experiencing the higher, then the lower will drop. When we say experience the higher, higher what? Higher?
You gave us the example of flower.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So I'll come to that. But the point is, what higher we are talking about? When I contact an object, I must experience the person who is contacting and the contacted object. But when I am contacting today, the person who is contacting is lost. I have become totally involved. So I get lost in the contact. Like some people get lost in meditation. That is not meditation, that is trance. Awareness. If it's not there while you meditate, it's not meditation. A boy's mind, without any problem, 24 hours, 365 days, goes to a girl with whom he has fallen in love. 24 hours, 365 days. Constantly thinking about that girl. So what is he doing? He is meditating, Swamiji. What meditation is this? You understand? His mind is running towards the object of his desire. This is not meditation, though it is running single-pointedly. Awareness. So, what is this taste of higher that we are talking about with which the lower drops? In that context, I gave the example which Swamiji gives in the book also. That is, when a flower matures into a fruit, then the petals fall away. By plucking the petals, it doesn't become a fruit. So like you're going and telling your children, it's not there, you go on like this. This lady has come again. You understand? So I have a big problem. So therefore it's not the plucking of petals. You understand? It is creating the environment situation for the flower to mature into a fruit, then the petals will fall away. So karma yoga, he spoke about. You cannot short circuit, bypass. You understand? This world is given to you just like how gold will become pure only when it is put in the fire. It has to go through the heat. Similarly, you have to go through the heat of experiences.
Unless you are aware, then you didn't complete it. I wanted to know.
Unless you are aware, you will not rise above it. That's what I said. I already spoke about it in length also, that when you contact, you be there fully. I am there contacting it. That is why, you see, everything in our culture is a ritual. You understand? A man and a woman, when they get married, there's a ritual. And before they start their conjugal relationship, there's a ritual. It's to make them aware. Once you go through the experiences with the total awareness, then you rise above it. Not otherwise. Whatever experience it might be. Good, bad and ugly. So therefore, once you rise higher, awareness, the intensity increases, then the lower will automatically drop. It has to drop. So, it's a growth. It's not giving up. By stopping your contact, by denying yourself the world, you cannot become a Satyabrahma. If it was so simple, all that we need to do is every day make a list and keep giving it to somebody. We'll become Satyabrahma maybe within a week or so. It's not like that. Isn't it? So who is a Satyabrahma? Not one who is not in front of the object. One in whom the object is not there. Put it like this. It's not the one who is not in front of the object, but in whom the object is not there. This is the point. If I have no problem with money, why should I run away from money? Obviously, I have some value for money. You should know the value of the object, but you should not have the value for the object. If you do not know the value of the object, then you are ignorant. You didn't know the value of a non-blank pen somebody gave you. You didn't know it cost so expensive and never knew about it. So he said, I don't want this pen, and he gave it to somebody, and you are using some renounce. You're comfortable with that. What a great renunciate he is. He doesn't know. Therefore he gave it away. There's another person who knows and is attached. But who is Sitapragna? Who knows the value of the object. But the object is not residing in his mind. There is no bondage between him and the object. He is liberated. What is bondage? You must understand. Only then you will liberate. Oh, moksha. Everybody, what not moksha you are talking about? Do you feel you are bound? What is bondage? Your mind has strands of attachment to various objects of this world. This is the bondage. You have to liberate yourself at the mental level. So all that they talk about is be mentally free. And a person who is mentally free, his potential is maximized. His service is maximized. He is able to apply himself totally. What somebody takes 2 hours, he does in 20 minutes. time management, everywhere when they go for lectures and all that, time management, what they talk about, prioritizing and this and that. Who is talking about inner potential? It's a permanent time management. In fact, you will have so much of time left with you to do much more. That is why I find, like we were talking about Swami Ramakrishna before this class, what they achieved in 32 years, somebody doesn't even achieve in 100 years. Because the mind is just meandering, meandering, meandering. So what they contribute is a frugal minimum. But what these people can contribute, it's a qualitative time that they spend here. So what is, even time management, if you see, even the inner potential wakes up, it goes in leaps and bounds. So, prajahati yada kaman sarvam partha manogatan atmaniyeva atmana tushtaha. Tushtaha means one who revels in himself by himself. And none of us can revel in ourselves by ourselves unless we gain the knowledge that the happiness is not there in the outside world. And therefore, I'm going step by step to tell you, outside world is your what? Yajna Kunda is your fire. You are the gold. The gold has to go through the fire to purify itself. You cannot run away from the world. Enter into the world. This is what Arjuna was told by Lord Krishna. Where are you trying to run away, man? This is a beautiful opportunity the world is offering you, and you are running away. Jump into it. Totally conscious. You will come out pure. And then you will see the happiness within. Then you are happy by yourself. So now let me come to the sadhana point of view. So what is it talking about? It is talking about self-sufficiency. Not to be dependent on the external world. So what is the mark of a spiritual person is the question. The spiritually perfect person. So the answer given is one who is self-sufficient and not dependent on the world. Isn't it? If you put it in the modern language. So the more spiritual you become, the less dependent you are on the world. Not that you will not contact with the world. You will be less dependent on the world. So the more self-sufficiency, less dependence. You may contact, but you are not dependent on it. A beautiful example Swami Ramakrishna gives, which Swamiji has taken in ET book also, which is a man, you know, walks through a jungle to go to his village, and a tiger is chasing him, a wild animal is chasing him. And to escape from that animal, he climbs the tree and he goes on the branch. The branch is not able to take his weight and it's bending. And when it's bending, the branch is bending towards a river that is flowing nearby. And in the river, there's a crocodile opening its mouth to swallow this guy. And there's a snake approaching him to, bite him. Imagine the condition of his mind, state of his mind. On the same branch, there is a bird that is perched. What is the condition of the bird's mind? Pretty relaxed. Why? Because it has wings. This guy doesn't have wings. It can take off when the branch breaks. Exactly the same thing. That is what Siddha Prajna is. Self-sufficient, he contacts the world, he is independent, he is not averse to take the help of others, because he understands externally everybody is interdependent. If I have to come to this class, I am dependent on the mode of transport. Somebody has to cook food, something, there are so many things on which I am interdependent. Everybody is interdependent. But to be mentally dependent on them is the problem. So therefore what he is saying, if you gain this knowledge, if you take up the higher, then you will become self-sufficient. So how do we put this as a practice? Wherever you can be self-sufficient. You are a busy person, you have so many other things to do, you are contributing at a higher level, and you can afford, therefore you may have servants. You can have a driver, you can have servants, and all that is fine, justified. But when sometime you are free, you are not that busy, you are sitting at home, somebody is ringing the bell, you go, stand up, go open the door yourself. Don't wait for somebody to go and open the door. You want a glass of water for yourself, go and get it. You are free. The driver is there. You drive the car. Self-sufficiency. You understand? Practice it. Wherever you can. Wherever you can practice self-sufficiency, slowly practice will make you become more self-sufficient in many, many ways. So this is a very small tip I am giving. This is what we are supposed to do, but we don't do it. And just because we can afford, we become more dependent. So when you say I can afford a servant, doesn't mean, but can you afford to be dependent? No. I can afford a servant, but I cannot afford to be dependent. Therefore, wherever, whenever I can be self-sufficient, I'll do. I will cook maybe there, but I'm free, so I'll cook. So you are not averse to utilize the offers of the world. World has offered you so many things. You are in a position. Use it. Enjoy it. But never be a slave to it. That is what is the problem. So, remember the bird's example. You should be like that. Chalo, he's not come. Take off. Oh, driver has not come. Driver is not come. I told you. Oh, chalo, driver has not come. We are not talking about plan B here. Plan B is getting ready. This is being ready. You see the difference? The seminars that you hear mostly talks about getting ready with a plan B. This is being ready. Because plan A can fail, plan B can fail, everything can fail. You don't start with the notion that it will fail, then it will fail. That's why I say, you know, I read long time ago, I read Dale Carnegie's book. He says, plan for the best and expect the worst. I don't agree with him. Unless he means the same thing as what I am saying. But the words matter a lot. You be very careful in the words. He says, plan for the best and expect the worst. And I feel, plan for the best and be ready. Be prepared for the worst. So Vedanta, when it says be ready, doesn't mean it's saying don't have a plan. But don't be dependent on the plan. Anything can happen. You should be ready. You should be a live wire. Vedanta is not saying don't prepare. But be ready. Any questions can be asked. You all saw that movie, no? Munna Bhai, MBBS. There one scene comes where three questions are going to be put to this guy. By the dean. And they say, you set the question and all that. So these guys, they set the question and they coach him. And he, you know, perhaps the answer and all that. So everybody is happy. And the question is asked. And he little bit tries to answer the same way. And then he says, forget that. Then he goes about talking to in the present moment. I fell by in a cancer and like that. You know, he talks. That's what I'm talking about. See, what the world is a live experience. You got to be available there alive, not as a dead person who's come with your notes. For this question, this answer, then why do you have to go there? You know, it is said, those days when Einstein came up with this theory of relativity, he was invited by many people for lecturing on the theory of relativity. He had gone and lectured many places. The same driver used to take him up and down and he used to listen to that lecture. And by the time he has heard 50 times, 60 times, the driver knows now what he speaks. And nobody knows Einstein in the sense, those days his pictures and all those things were not so famous or whatever. Some people did not know him also. They knew about him, but they didn't know who Einstein is.
So Ramdev Thakur said, since I can lecture this thing, I'll go and lecture you, you relax. So he went and gave a big lecture and everybody appreciated, and somebody asked a question. And he said, see, this question is so silly that even my driver can answer and I'll send my driver. So I said, see, in other words, it's not parroting. It's not a painting of an artist. The world is a painting of divinity. Okay? You have your plans. You have your programs. You have your set of preparations. But then be ready. Alive. But we are losing ourselves in the plans and programs, in schedules. That's why the little schedule goes haywire, we become unnerved. We don't know what to do now. Nervous. Oh, this, what's going to happen? Take it. This is a beautiful opportunity. You understand? It should make you become more alive. Death of a person should bring the maximum aliveness in you. But that is when we tend to become more dead. We start thinking about the experiences we had with that person, and then we start sobbing and, you know, all that. We start seeking pity. But death, here is a person who is dead. That means it's telling life is like that. Any day it can go. So this is where I am supposed to be more alert. And death should bring my alertness. But everybody is losing their alertness and awareness in death. So they never conquer death. So Adi Shankara says, Punarapi Jananam, Punarapi Maranam. So the alertness and awareness. So therefore, Vedanta is not saying don't have servants, don't have plans, don't have, you know, plan A, plan B, like that. Everything is fine. All preparations are fine. But above all preparations, are you ready? This is the point. You know, recently somebody, I forget who, I think Narayan Murthy. Yeah, I think Mr. Narayan Murthy. He said this in the some of the television channels, I think, or some, where when he spoke, he said, nowadays in IIT, when students come and join IIT, they have been going through this IIT preparation courses and they just score marks and get ready, come into IIT. So they crack those marks and come. But they're not these people who are ready and smart. So if a question is put in a different way, they don't know how to apply themselves. It was not the same case, he says, according to him, before all these IIT preparation courses and things like that came. I'm told in South India, now they have this preparation starting from 600 for IIT. So you are, you know, made to think in one particular direction. So if a question comes or something goes wrong, then you don't know how to answer that question. Little twist. You cannot answer. Why? Because you are not ready. You are prepared. Are you with me? Your preparations have gone through, but you are not ready. You have said this 5 years question paper you study, definitely from this only the questions will come. So you spent all your life, you studied all the 5 years, you answered it back and backwards also you gave answers. Same questions, little twist they gave here and there, you fail. Why? You did not lack preparation. What you lacked is being ready. This is what he is talking about here. It's a totally different ballgame. Did Arjuna lack preparation? Arjuna was number one in the art of archery and he had experience also. Did he lack experience? When you recruit people for your organizations, you take care of these two things, no? MBAs from the best universities and experiences in the past. But is he ready? Firstly, you are not ready. That's the point. So therefore, it's not the lack of preparation. We are not ridiculing preparation, I am repeating it again and again. But it's not the lack of preparation. It is not the lack of experiences. It is being ready. It is being awakened. So therefore, practice wherever you can, small little self-sufficiencies. Never become dependent. So you will be surprised when any eventualities come, then you are ready. Why any situation gives you stress? Not because you are not prepared, because you know that preparations can fail. Everything can fail, but I am there. So therefore, always remember, I cannot be dependent on the objects and beings. I have no resistance or aversion in using the objects and beings, and there is facility available. But I should be like that bird that is perched on the tree. Self-sufficiency. We're talking about Swami Ramtirtha. He talks about 7 steps to success. One of the things he talks about is self-sufficiency. Few things he talks about: self-sufficiency, self-sacrifice, self-respect, etc. Without self-sufficiency, you cannot achieve anything in life. So first point, when he talks about man of perfection, he's talking about being independent. So we are all also attending Vedanta classes for so many months and so many years. How do we know whether we are improving? How do you find out whether you are growing spiritual, whether you are perfecting yourself, whether it is improving? What is the measuring scale with which you measure? How self-sufficient are you becoming? How dependent are you? Small little things, at least you should become self-sufficient. Start with, because it matters what you can believe. If I tell you, start becoming self-sufficient at a very, very high level, deep inside you are not having belief that I can be self-sufficient, I can be independent of it. So there are certain areas now, even though I am not independent of it now, but I feel I can be independent. I have belief that I can be independent. Then those areas you start practicing. Then you see. There will be remarkable difference in your life. So world is not giving you stress. It is your dependence on the world that gives you stress. When Buddha had gone to some village, they were abusing him. He heard them very, very patiently. And after they finished, he said, if you have all finished what you wanted to offer, I would like to take a leave now. I would like to leave from this place. Because I was about to go, so you came and you were offering me abuses. I hope you finished whatever you wanted to offer. So now can I move? That's all he said. He said, what kind of a person are you there? You're not reacting at all. So he said, see, before coming to your village, I had gone to another village. In that village, they brought lots of sweets on a tray. They kept lots of sweets and then they brought it to me. I said, no, thank you. So what did they do? They anyway brought these sweets. So they said, let's distribute it amongst ourselves. So similarly, you gave me a lot of abuses. Now I said, no, thank you. Now you can distribute it amongst yourselves. It is his privilege to abuse you. Can you not be independent of it? It is his or her privilege to have an opinion about you. Can you not be independent of it? A human being's life should be independent of what happens around him or her. We call ourselves the Shabdiyar of creation. We say we are better than animals. In what way, I don't know. There is constant dependence, and then we blame the world for our stress. Oh, that is disturbing me, this is disturbing me, it is see, you can you may not start a business, but you may start an ashram. Ashram is a bigger samsara. You listen, it's a much bigger samsara. You can be stressed by your ashram also. See, it's not what you meet in life that gives you stress. It is how you meet it. If you lack the resilience, if you lack the self-sufficiency, then world will be the boss. If you have the self-sufficiency, then world will be under you. You will be a master. So therefore, if from today onwards anybody tells you that Vedanta will make you run away from the world, please tell them, Vedanta does not make me run away from the world. It wants me to meet the world as a master and not as a slave. That's all it is. Being a master when I contact, not a slave. So small little areas, practice self-sufficiency, because many of us have so many areas in which we are dependent. But there has to be a start somewhere. So identify that today and start from that place. Let me become self-sufficient. Like for example, when I was studying in the ashram, I remember when Swamiji speaks, he used to take notes, you know. And after that, I used to see there is another colleague of mine. He used to take more notes. He can write fast and all that. So there was, over a period, suddenly I felt, you know, I was feeling, I'm not taking enough notes. I should copy from him. So I used to borrow his notes and write down, and it was going on like this for a while. Then I said, no, listen, stop it. It's not what I write in the notes. Notes will, notebook will be Siddha Prajna. Not me. You understand? It's not benefit I'm going to get. It's not the notes. Whatever I can write, I'll be self-sufficient. And this is giving an example because it came to my thought now. You know. So I immediately decided one day, I'm not going to do this exercise. Let me be self-sufficient. In the process, what is happening? I'm becoming dependent. Oh, he's taking notes. You know, this is the problem. No. I should not be averse to take, if I want to note down something from him which is very important, I should not be averse. But this is bringing me to dependence rather than self-sufficient. So being in the ashram, I'm becoming more dependent. And we become dependent on the institutes. We become dependent on medicines. We become dependent on the doctors. Let me tell you, in some cases the doctors will tell you, no chance of survival. There are patients who have survived. How is that? What do you think they survived? How do you think they survived? Not that they did not respect the doctor's opinion, but they refused to become dependent on his opinion. They always saw the tunnel, the light in the tunnel. It is the dependency that limits us. They took the opinion, they understood medical science today tells us that this is it, but then I'm not going to become dependent on it. I'm not going to become dependent on this test. My potential is much more. Let me work on it. You will tandem with the laws of nature. Self-sufficiency is not ego, because ego is not in tandem with law of nature. It is me versus others. It is self-sufficiency with me with others that I am talking about. Not me versus others. How can I take the help from them? That is ego. This is the difference you should know. If you don't know this difference, then you will mix self-sufficiency with ego. In fact, you will become more stressed, more agitated. We will chant verse 56.
Dukkeshvanudvigna manaha Sukeshu vigatasprahaha Sukeshu vigatasprahaha Vitaragabaya krodaha Sthitadhirmuni ruchyate Dukkeshvanudvigna manaha Sukeshu vigatasprahaha Vitaragabaya krodaha Sthitadhirmuni ruchyate.
He whose mind is not agitated by sorrow nor excited by joy, who is free from desire, fear and anger, he is called a sage of steady wisdom. So in the second verse he is describing the question Kim Asita means how does he sit, means what is this state of inner nature, inner personality. So what is he saying here? He whose mind is not agitated by sorrow. That means what? He also goes through sorrow, but he is not victimized by sorrow. And then he is not excited by joy. Means what? He goes through joy, but he is not excited by joy. So in other words, he also goes through joy and sorrow, but joy and sorrow doesn't do anything to him. So, Siddhartha means in his mind there is no desire. So he is just sitting. He is somebody who doesn't go through joy or sorrow. He is just like a state of plant or a piece of wood, let us say. A piece of wood? No. That's what he is saying. He is not a piece of wood, man. He also goes through sorrow, like you and me. When somebody dies, it's a situation that brings sorrow. It's a sorrowful situation. He will also go through sorrow. But like I said, in that death he will be alert. When somebody wins a lottery and he wins a lottery, it's a situation that brings him joy, but he will be alert there. Therefore, he will not be overthrown by joy and sorrow. And he is free from desire, fear and anger. He is free from desire, fear and anger means what? Not that he has suppressed fear, anger and it is gone deep inside him and it is not showing outside. It is not present in him at all. But when you see the charcoal is completely burnt and there is only ashes, so you feel it is completely gone, the fire. But when you put your finger inside and you know stir it, you will see there is little sparks. Like that in many people, they think they have conquered anger, they have conquered desire, they have conquered fear, but it is hiding in deep inside their subconscious. That is why somebody comes and they are capable of making you angry. Always we say, oh sir, I tell you, I am very very comfortable, I don't get usually angry, you know, but this person, and let me tell you sir, this person makes me angry. Nobody can make you angry. They can only bring the anger which is deep inside you to the surface. See, during day also there is stars, but because of the sun's light you don't see it. But at night you can see the stars. When you don't see the star in the day, doesn't mean the star is not there. It's there. Similarly, in many people you don't see anger, you don't see fear. That doesn't mean they are fearless. They have pushed the fear deep inside them somewhere. Therefore, somebody comes and they strike them at the right place, then the anger comes out. A Siddha Prajna is like a well where there is no water. So even if you throw the bucket inside, you will not be able to draw the water out. So similarly, you can throw as many stones and as many things at him, but since there is no anger inside, no anger will come out. So it is absence of anger, it is not hiding of anger. We'll talk about this verse in detail next week. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purna Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadhaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.